Hi, everybody, and welcome again to our continuing work with Letters on Occult Meditation. We're on program 58. Looks like we're going to examine three approaches. In our last program, 57, we examined the Raja Yoga approach, which DK linked to the first ray and its complementary ray, presumably ray 7. Basically, I'm going to give a little bit of the segue here. So, you know, it's about the training of the disciple. Every power of the mind will be utilized to the uttermost for the furtherance of the plans of evolution, first in the man's own development, then in the special field of work wherein he expresses himself, and lastly, in his relation with other units of the race as he constitutes himself their guide and servant. And probably some of us are in that position where we are on our own lesser level, lesser than the masters, of course, constituting ourselves guides and servants to others. And then he says, see you therefore the synthesis of it. First, the strenuous one-pointedness that is the sign of the occultist. The occultist comes in on the first ray particularly, and associated rays. Let's see if I'm having a little trouble here. The fifth ray lately has been very much the ray of the occultist because of its investigation of new areas of phenomena which are entering the etheric realm. So first, the strenuous one-pointedness, that is the sign of the occultist. The mystic is on the second ray, the magician on the third, the artist on the fourth, the scientist on the fifth, the devotee on the sixth, and the ritualist on the seventh. You can find this in Letters on Occult. No. You can find this in The Destiny of the Nations. Okay. So see you, therefore, the synthesis of it. First, the strenuous one-pointedness that is the sign of the occultist, blended with the wisdom and love, which we're now going to take up, which are reflected from the higher in the mirror of the, I presume, the astral body, of the emotional body. And then the intellect, forced to act as the servant of the ego, the intellect or mind being a good servant but a poor master, as the old adage tells us. And then the intellect, forced to act as the servant of the ego through one-pointed effort, but animated by love and wisdom. And the result will be the true yogi. And all of us are trying to become yogis, not in the conventional sense, but those who have linked the lower and the higher, and through whom the higher manifests along with and through the lower. He goes on and says, I would point out here that the true yogi is he who, after due carrying out of the set forms and times of meditation, how rigorous that is, we see, merges that meditation in the everyday living and will eventually be in the attitude of meditation all the day. I think this is very much what Alice Bailey was able to do, and the more advanced students find themselves having meditated so much and so effectively that their entire life becomes that kind of sensitive alertness, which is meditation. Meditation is the means whereby the higher consciousness is contacted. When the contact becomes continuous, meditation as you understand it is superseded. But, you know, he's hinting that some other kind of meditation, which is not of the type that we understand, or the type that is habitual to our consideration, supersedes. And then we will discover what it is like to be in the consciousness of the higher initiate or the master. Now, the methods we've been talking about will have to do with rays 1, 2, and 3. In the first method, which we have discussed, the occult student works from the periphery to the center, from the objective to the subjective, from the form to the life within the form. In other words, from the outer to the inner. Therefore, through the emphasis laid in Raja Yoga on the physical body, interestingly enough, and its wise control, the occultist, you know, along the 1357 line, realizes the essential importance of the physical. And this is quite a statement following. And the uselessness of all his knowledge apart from a physical body, whereby he can express himself and serve the race. It is the line of the first ray and its affiliated or complementary ray. Note here the singular, the use of the singular in the word ray, because later it will not be the singular that is used, but a plural. Well, you know, particularly the line 1-5-7 is the line of the occultist. Scientist and ritualist being subsumed in the first ray occult approach. As for ray 3, well, it's on that line, but it holds kind of an ambiguous place, because it represents the Holy Spirit and sometimes the mother aspect. And so it has a strong connection also to the feminine. Okay, so that's a little segue. Maybe it's more for me than for you. I've been away from the book too long. Last time it was almost a month, and this time more like a week, but still too long. Now, there's another method. It's the love wisdom method. This method of training, of becoming the true yogi, truly linked to the higher possibilities, This method is the line of least resistance for the sons of men. And why is that? Perhaps it is because one day, and it will not be long, I suspect, the soul of humanity will more and more show itself on the second ray, instead of on the fourth ray, as is, I would suspect, now the case. There are so many fours that are connected with what the human group is, the fourth creative hierarchy, the fourth kingdom in nature, and the all this taking place in the fourth chain, on the fourth globe, and really the whole planetary scheme is the fourth, if we count Vulcan, and not necessarily other intra-mercurial planets, which are said to exist, but Vulcan, Mercury, Venus, Earth, four. So the love wisdom ray will eventually take the place of the fourth ray, I think, in the soul nature. Our solar system is a solar system of the fourth order. It is, it has a yellow sun. The yellow is the color of the fourth ray. We're just remarkably within the ranges of four, but four will give way to two. So love wisdom is the sub-ray of the synthetic ray of an analogous vibration. The great synthetic ray holds all the seven rays, including the love wisdom ray. Now, it itself is a love wisdom ray. The great synthetic ray is love wisdom. However, there is considered to be a sub-ray of the great love wisdom ray, which is perhaps characterized coloristically as indigo. So it is the sub-ray of the synthetic ray of an analogous vibration, of which our solar system is the objective manifestation. Well, we have a lot on our planet that is connected with the second ray, but the entire solar system is brought forth on the second ray. It is the soul ray of our solar logos, and probably at length, the major monadic ray of our solar system, which would make the rays of the present solar system monadically, in terms of soul and in terms of personality, 2-2-2. But eventually, in the next solar system, it will be 2-2-1. And there we will have a the so-called will system. But we will still hold our place within the local cosmic logos as a great heart center, even though the personality ray will be the first. Then he goes on and says, but I would seek to point out that the love achieved by the student of meditation who follows this line is not the sentimental conception that is so often discussed as love. It is not the non-discriminating love that sees no limitation, nor concedes a fault. Love can, you know, go too far without wisdom to counterbalance it. And he even warns groups. He says, there are certain stars or constellations upon which a group may meditate and thereby bring in more love than is wise at the time, and an imbalance would occur. I have a feeling that that meditation might be targeted towards Orion and especially towards Betelgeuse, the star from our perspective, which is a giant red star, supergiant, in the upper left-hand corner of Orion. Maybe. So everything has to be kept in a proper balance, or as good as the quality may be that is evoked, it will cause a destructive imbalance and throw off the timing of the divine plan. So he goes on and says, you know, tells us, this kind of love that brought our solar system into objective manifestation, it is not certain things. Let's see if I can. It's not doing so well. I would like, you know, as always, to when possible, have a bracket like this one. Nice bracket. Okay, and maybe make it a little bit, a little smaller. Okay. So all the things we're discussing what the love which brought the solar locus into objective manifestation is not. It is not the love that seeks not to correct and that expresses itself in an ill-advised attitude to all who live. That would be so permissive that the person might never improve. I'll just say too permissive. We sometimes think, you know, that if we compliment something, everything that a person does, we are loving them. But in fact, it's like throwing fertilizer on the weeds as well as the plants that you want in your garden. So, you know, it takes some firm line to demonstrate the real love. It is not the love that sweeps all into service, suitable and unsuitable, because you have to be discriminating when you choose people with whom to serve, even as the Tibetan was, when out of many possibilities, he chose certain arcane school students and some who were not members of the arcane school at all, to comprise his groups. So it's not the love that sweeps all into service, suitable or unsuitable, you know, inappropriate perhaps, or appropriate, and that recognizes no difference in point of development. I think, you know, we're dealing quite a bit here with sentiment. Much that is called love, if logically followed out, would apparently dispense with the ladder of evolution. This is something people have a tough time tolerating anyway, because the natural human factor of envy enters into the situation, and people they want inappropriately what the other has without earning it. So they dismiss hierarchy as an inappropriate structure. They find that that structure is not appealing to them, because it requires humility, an adjusted sense of right proportion, you know. It requires what Master Moria calls co-measurement, a real assessment of progress and of the expression of spiritual values. So, like, everybody's equal? Well, yes, monadically. At the beginning. But what has the monad done as the triad, as the soul, as the personality? That has to be taken into consideration. So, all are of equal value. So, says the Tibetan, potentially all are, but in present terms of service, all are not. Now, that's a hard one. Because, you know, we come into that statement that all human beings are created equal. That is true, if we know what it means by creating the human being. It is really occurring on a much higher level than what we call the birth of a body, you know, born equal. There's a great ladder of evolution, and it extends so far that we human beings don't have the mind to follow it. But we know that it does arrive at a great equality of being in which all technically are the universal logos, the one life of the universe, but meanwhile, in the illusion of time and space caused by the perception of self-reduction into the many, there is a hierarchy. And it's not going to be easy to have people accept that, especially those who are traveling the wheel in the normal clockwise manner and are thoroughly invested in their personality as if that were their reality. So he goes on. True love or wisdom sees with perfect clarity the deficiencies of any form and bends every effort to aid the indwelling life to liberate itself from trammels. Trammels, an old word but basically binding chains or some means of binding the life. It wisely recognizes those that need help and those that need not its attention. Remember, one of the highest forms of psychism is to recognize the need of another. It hears with precision and sees the thought of the heart. Blending, of course, this is a Jupiter-Venus kind of union, the thought of the heart. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. It hears with precision, very observant, very acute, and sees the thought of the heart and seeks ever to blend into one whole the workers in the field of the world. So it is acutely perceptive, and has much skill in action. This it achieves not by blindness, you know, being blind to the areas in which another should improve, or oneself. This it achieves not by blindness, but by discrimination and wisdom, separating contrary vibrations and placing them in positions diverse. This is sort of uniquely the Tibetan expressing himself, this kind of word, these kinds of words. So, you know, when we see the deficiencies in the form, the attitude, the behavior, the consciousness of another, we seek to liberate that in the right way through discriminative wisdom. And not just, oh, this is overlooked, that's not important. Especially if we have responsibility for the individual, then our discriminative wisdom can really come into play and be of value to them, rather than just accept everything they do. And that goes for oneself. We do separate contrary vibrations in our own case, and we don't allow ourselves everything. Too much emphasis has been laid on what, on that called love, interpreted by man according to his present place in evolution, and not enough has been placed on wisdom. Kind of hints at where the Tibetan stands here, which is love expressing itself in service, such a service that recognizes the occult law, the significance of time, and the point achieved. Very clear exposition of what we have to cultivate, rather than our usual tendency to be quote-unquote loving in the sentimental manner. This may be a challenge to many of us. As I pause here, I know it's a challenge to me, and maybe you will find that that is the case for yourself. In the beginning of Rule 11, he talks about the need to eliminates sentiment, and part of that is the sentimental love, the first two eliminations, sentiment and personal attachment to the people who are in the group in which one is attempting to serve. So the Tibetan is attempting to restore balance. Love, wisdom, a dual ray, and maybe by the time we reach the seventh initiation, long way from us, perhaps by that time we will be in a position really to know what love and wisdom in combination are and how they should be used. Remember, we're now talking about the initiatory status of the Christ or of the Buddha. So, this is the line of the second ray and its affiliated and complementary rays. Notice here that that's the plural on the word ray, whereas we didn't have that when we looked at the Raja Yoga first ray method. It was a singular. I guess, you know, maybe there's such a thing as being too observant of these verbal changes, but at the same time, the the Tibetan has assured us that we don't read carefully enough. So, and sometimes he will, as you know, tell us that he's choosing these particular words with great care. You know, so there are a couple of degrees of gradation there. How he normally writes, which requires close attention, and then some statements which require really close attention. Affiliated and complementary rays. Of course, complements in color would bring in a different line. A complement of complement of the seventh ray, violet, would be the yellow. Two different ray lines. The complement of the indigo would be more an orange type of color. Again, a kind of a blending of the two and five. So there are many intricacies here that will be revealed to us as we deepen our studies in meditation and the application of the same. So this is the line of the second ray, but later it is the all-inclusive one and the solvent and absorber, meaning, you know, the greater second ray, which has all seven rays, as I've said, as sub-rays. It can be followed, being synthetic, on either the Raja Yoga line or the Christian Gnostic line, owing to its synthetic significance. Now, there's another ellipse, and lately more and more of these original typings have been emerging, and so we will probably before long know what's in those ellipses. And maybe we'll know the reason why they were ellipses. And maybe sometimes it would be best not to know, because they may not have been relevant immediately to what we are to gain from our studies. So the Raja Yoga line is considered first ray, and apparently the Christian Gnostic line is considered second ray, with the associated rays. There's just so much to learn. But as he says, if we can't apply it, then it is really useless to us if we cannot apply it. So every day, I suppose, when we look at the day, review it, we have to see whether we have succeeded in any respect with the factor of application. And that's what will make a real disciple of us. Now, further, to be the true yogi, you know, the one who has bridged the gap, who has built the antikarana, who is a blend of higher and lower, the third ray has to come into expression. Here the order is reversed. And the student, being frequently polarized in his mental body, has to learn through that mind to understand the other two and to dominate and control and utilize to the uttermost the powers inherent in the threefold man. So we have the possibility of utilization through intelligence going on here. And it's so true that we so often begin, at least studying the Tibetan material, with an intellectual bias. I think people are not especially attracted to the Tibetan's work unless they have at least a pretty strong mental focus, which we know is not the same as full mental polarization. But many of us are studying these higher methods of love and of will by means of the mental body. I think that is what he's trying to tell us here. See if it isn't so for yourself. You know, even reading these books, the qualities revealed by the intellect are easier of apprehension than the qualities which are to be revealed at first by the intellect and then by experience, namely true love, fire of love, and true will, the fire of the will to good, you know. Words we use so often, but which unfortunately are not living experiences within our expression. The method here is perhaps not so hard in some ways, but the limitations of the fifth principle have to be transcended before real progress can be made. Now, you know, what do we have there? The idea that the mind can be the slayer of the real, as well as the revealer of the real. So it's how we use our mind as an instrument of revelation that really counts here. These limitations are largely crystallization, and that which you call pride, you know, certainly we students of Bailey have often fallen into both. Both have to be broken before the student who progresses through intellectual application can serve his race with love and compassion as the animating cause. When we talk about animating cause, we think of anima, we think of the soul, and that the soul and its higher correspondence, the spiritual triad, have to be the animators. Even the monad has soul, has consciousness, has awareness. A lot of these terms have a certain applicability across apparent lines of distinction. Well, anyway, we have to transcend crystallization and pride. And you can detect it, you know. Not so easy to get beyond the pride of a good mind, which can be effectively used and used more effectively than other people can use the mind. It's a trap. And we have to value, you know, love and will above the mind. Remember that Moses, symbol here of the mind, never did enter the promised land. He directed others to enter the promised land. But the mind, especially the lower mind per se, cannot enter the promised land. Both have to be broken. Both crystallization and pride. Well, Libra is a supramental sign. And Libra gives humility, an adjusted sense of right proportion. It's sometimes said that Dihya's ashram has a lot to do with Libra. If you think that of the five first externalizing masters, that his ashram is responsible for bringing into expression right human relations, we can see its possible association with Libra. So those upon this path of the mind have to transcend the limitations of the fifth principle before it's possible for them to make real progress. And I recommend that we consider the method, because I'm sure that many of us, given the line of study which we have pursued, have been trapped therein, trapped in these limitations. What I think I'll try to do is, you know, go up to the end here. of this particular letter. All this given to Alice Bailey in the course of a month. Quite amazing, isn't it? He has to learn the value of the emotions. Quite a number of already individualized souls, maybe from Vulcan, maybe from Mercury, come to the Earth for further training so that they can open the second petal of the egoic lotus, which has to do with the beginning of sensitivity to emotional life. Of course, animals have emotions too, but they're not conscious of them. We're talking about the realization that comes from self-consciousness of the emotions. He has to learn the value of the emotions, and in so learning, he has to master the effect of fire on water, occultly understood. It does cause glamour, you know, and steam and obstruction of vision. It's a chamomanus, in a way. It's the blend of the fire of mind with the water of emotion. So learning the value of emotions, those upon the more intellectual path have to learn that. It won't come as a surprise because, you know, all of us have to be rounded out. And we start with a particular bias, which is rather exclusive at times, only to discover that it's not adequate to live an entirely spiritually satisfactory life. He has to learn the secret of that plane, which secret, when known, gives him the key to the downpour of illumination from the triad via the causal and thence to the astral. Notice this via the causal. Sometimes we talk as if the causal body is completely bypassed with the building of the Antikorana. But here, there seems to be a line from Buddhi through to the astral. And it will also hold the key to the fourth etheric level, which I assume is the one, the lowest, and which science now is beginning to penetrate in a rather material manner. Not so much the psychological. The secret of the astral plane, the plane of emotions, which, when known, brings in Buddhic illumination via, I suppose, the synthesis petals for which the Buddhic plane is responsible. At least they were constructed of Buddhic energy or from a downflow of Buddhi. And through different petals of the egoic lotus until the astral plane is reached. And what mystery is this? It holds the key also to the fourth etheric level. And why would that be? Because the Buddhic plane is the fourth plane and corresponds to the fourth ether. The Buddhic plane being the fourth of the cosmic ethers and the normal fourth subplane, the fourth of the planetary ethers within the dense physical body of the planetary logos. So it holds also the key to the fourth etheric level. You know, okay, sometimes I don't know when to put in white and when to just leave the color as it is. Okay, this will not as yet be comprehended by you, okay? It's always reassuring, right, when we don't comprehend. But the above hint holds for the student much of value. I suppose the plane of discrimination, subplane of discrimination on the mental plane, is also attached. And that the emotional petals, the petals of love, are involved as well. Because in a way they are the fourth series of petals. If we start in the causal body from the jewel, the synthesis petals, the sacrifice petals, and then number four, the love petals, with number five being the petals of light and knowledge. Anyway, this is not going to be easily comprehended, and even in those early books, so much is given that is just not easily comprehended at all. And later we'll wonder, when we do comprehend, how we could have glossed over it. That it takes very, very steady application. And our gratitude to the Tibetan has to be immense. When you think of what has been revealed compared to what we might have known without his revelation. This is the line of the third ray, and it's four subsidiary rays, and it's one of great activity, you know, third ray, ray of activity, ray of active intelligence, probably active service is found connected there. I think it's one of the atmic qualities. It's one of great activity, of frequent transference, and of much mental display in the lower worlds. It is also a ray which presently is out of alignment, and which, because of that incorrect alignment, being a bit too low, should we say, in the handle of the dipper, causes its tendency to be used for lower purposes, which is now a very big problem across humanity, because so many people either have the third ray or sixth ray personality. The majority is found with either the third or the sixth ray, and the third ray is in a way embodying the dweller on the threshold, because higher ways of using it have not been realized or not been attempted sufficiently. So we have to really redeem this third ray, and of course we're on a planet where it becomes utterly necessary, given the third ray personality of our planetary scheme, and the fourth ray, the second ray soul of our planetary scheme. Only when the student who progresses by intellectual application has learned the secret of the fifth plane, you know, maybe related to the secret of the soul and Capricorn, will he live the life of sanctified service and so blend the three rays? Well, we, a couple of programs ago, studied all the requirements. Well, not all, maybe, but many requirements of living the really committed, sanctified spiritual life. High in its requirements. The fifth plane, you know, holds as symbolic the proper pentagram with the upward fifth point and the material pentagram with the inverted fifth point. The lower four subplanes are perhaps symbolized by that inverted five-pointed star. The upper three, symbolized by the upright five-pointed star. And really, on the fourth subplane, I suppose there's some kind of alternation going on as one is constantly attempting to discriminate the way of the angel of the presence and the way of the dweller. Always synthesis must be attained, but always the fundamental coloring or tone remains. Now, esoterically, somewhere it tells us, the fifth ray is indigo. We also get other, you know, esoteric colors for the fifth ray. Maybe not orange, and maybe some kind of yellow. I'll take a look. It's around page 420 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. So if I went to take a look, what would I find? Oh, if I find something, I'll show you. Esoteric Psychology. See, there's some kind of mistake in the book. This fifth ray has the color, yeah, the color indigo is the esoteric color. And there are two times the word esoteric is used, which is, as we see here, I think we see, not really correct. But indigo is considered the esoteric color, and the word exoteric is printed in the book for yellow. Also, orange is an esoteric color for the fifth ray. So indeed, indigo, like the indigo of the great second ray, They are the same, giving a very, very close relation to of the higher aspect of the fifth ray to the second. And that takes us right to Venus with its fifth ray soul and its probable final highest second ray monad, the major ray of monadic ray of Venus, the major monadic ray. Well, these are a web of relationships, but increasingly we have to learn to apply them in practical service for the human race. One of the methods of healing that is forthcoming most rapidly will be that involving sound and color, because the fourth ray is coming in via its monadic aspect in 2025. And that is the ray that gives particular attention to color and sound. But anyway, the fundamental tone, which is the indigo, will remain. The next or fifth round, the round in which we might expect the judgment day to occur, will show the greatest exposition of this method of powerful mental development. So, I guess we can put that in Mercury's color, which is yellow. It will be the round. See, even though we're told that the high point of mentality is being reached now, it is in a sub-cycle. A much greater cycle of developing mentality is coming with the onset of the fifth chain round right here in our own planetary scheme. It will be the round of supreme mental development and will carry its evolving monads to heights undreamed of now. And I suppose what this means is monads of the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh rays, with the third being the being the inclusive ray of the other four. Now, he has told us that the present round, or now, basically, is a time of achievement for monads on the third ray. And the next round for monads on the second ray, and I suppose after that for monads on the first ray, but probably there is a correspondence, because it would seem that real achievement could best be undertaken in the fifth round. But still, there are many, even now, who can achieve. And by what is achievement, maybe it's the taking of the fourth initiation, which gives us a direct connection to the monad. Anyway, this will be a round of supreme mental development. Be nice to have a orange highlighter, but I don't think I do. So I'll just use the yellow. I mean, as we look at animal intelligence right now and note some gains in it, but basically of a rather halting kind, so the greater lives look upon us and our mental capacities. We do have to use the law of analogy as much as may be possible to get a grasp, an overview of what our place is and how we are progressing. So he's saying something a little bit different here. If I could find it, it would be most interesting. It's one of those things that you might have to take a while to go find. But I'll just take one pot shot, as it were. Round third achievement. Now, what have we here? And well, this is a little different. It has to do with the primary lotuses that have come in under the fifth ray to our system. And let's see here. I'm not doing too well. Previous. Okay, so what does it say? I'm not sure this is exactly the reference I'm looking for, but anyway. Okay, there are various charts. They depict only one cycle in logoic evolution and cover only the present greater period in the working out of which we are engaged. Working out of which we are engaged. They might be roughly described as embracing that period in the system. Which began with the middle of the third root race of this round and continues until the period called the judgment in the fifth round. So it's pretty well the judgment is determined as occurring on our planetary chain, on our planetary scheme, and in our planetary chain. When that time comes, our planetary logos will have attained the initiation, which is his present goal. I suppose either the second or the third, cosmic. The fifth round of the Venusian scheme will be closing. That may be a scheme round. And the Venus scheme will begin to pass into obscuration, preparatory to transferring her life to the synthesizing planet with which she is connected. That would be Neptune, I think. Mercury will be reaching the apotheosis of achievement, and with Mars and the Earth will form a systemic triangle. Even now, I think it does. And we are speaking here of schemes and not chains. So he does clarify. Well, I think this is maybe not the reference that I was hoping for, but it does give good information for sure. Yeah, there's no question that those who have come from the moon chain and are largely third-ray monads in one of the monadic positions, either sub or major, have a time of achievement immediately before them. Oh, you know, it makes me want to... Achievement. Oh my goodness. Third ray achievement. And there are 12 references. You know, I'm a bit of an addict when it comes to tracing down certain references. But I'm not sure. I'm going to be much more successful. And then later it will just pop up and be easy. Yeah, it's not going to be successful, but okay. I'm sorry for the slight delay here. Well, you know, I'm not going to find it, but the idea is that those monads who are along the intellectual line and have a lot to do with the moon and with venturing from an earlier location, the moon chain, or maybe also the previous major solar system, will reach their point of achievement shortly. And those on the secondary line a bit later, and those on the first ray line still later. Okay. Anyway, the second method has been the love wisdom method. This round marks the height of the second method, that through love or wisdom. It is the fourth round, that we're on the emotional, you know, adjectival nouns here, reaches a high point of vibration, and there is a direct connection between the fourth plane of harmony, between the emotional body, or the fourth principle, counting, well, one direction or another, the quaternary, the fourth root race, or the Atlantean, which coordinated the astral, and I give you food for thought in these correspondences. Okay, so it's a blend. Of the second and the fourth rays. The fourth plane of harmony, the Buddhi plane, the fourth plane of harmony between the emotional body, and there is that the sixth principle is found on the plane of harmony, and the sixth plane on the astral. And, you know, how shall we begin counting the principles? If we count from below, it all depends. The principle can be considered maybe the third, maybe the fourth. Or from above, the fourth principle, perhaps. It depends on whether we consider the physical body to be a principle, which usually we do not. So there is a connection between the fourth plane of harmony, between the emotional body, or the fourth principle. Look around page 259, 260, and following of a treatise on cosmic fire, and you'll see different ways of numbering the principles. The fourth root race, which should have a particular connection with Buddhi, whereon the monads find their expression, the monads of the fourth group, the initiates, at least find expression, if not their home. The fourth root race, or the Atlantean, which coordinated the astral. Even now, as we are attempting to coordinate the higher correspondence to the astral, which is the Buddhic vehicle. And I give you food for thought in these correspondences. Okay, friends, that probably should be it. Since I've been away for a while, I'm being cautious about how much I undertake. But the next section, which is going to lead to the new esoteric schools very shortly. Yeah, here it is. That is really the next and final section of letter 8. Now, I have done a fairly meticulous job of the material, written commentary on the material of the new esoteric schools. Whether some additional thought might emerge that would be of value. If I use a video commentary, I will have to decide. And I don't think I'll decide, you know, right this moment. Anyway, this takes us through three methods of becoming the true initiate, the true yogi, and leads us in our next section into five effects of meditation in the three worlds. And so we'd be talking about actual externalized results. Okay, that'll be it for now. Many blessings, lots of love, and we just keep studying, don't we? And we meditate and gain ever higher point of attention. And we apply. So I'll stop the recording and prepare this for you. It will be put on Makara. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.